Mishnah Dalet. This is the fourth Mishnah of the third chapter. Sholosh Imois, Aleph Memshin Beshono. Three mothers, three mother letters, Aleph Memshin in the year. Previous Mishnah was three letters, Aleph Memshin Ba'olam, in the world. So now we're talking in the year. Koir is cold, Vachoim and heat, Urevoyo, which I have translated as fullness. Choim nivro me'esh, heat comes from fire, koir mimayim, cold comes from water, revoyo, and the fullness, meruach from breath, machria bintayim, tips the balance between fire and water, between the hot and cold. This is the psicha l'mishneh dalet, the preface. Mamshech b'shono. So, after talking about the world, the Sefer Yetzirah continues with shono. Kishono, the word shono, has the it suggests change and repetition. V'cheinu b'poel, and so it is in reality. Ki hashono no'ot soifa b'tchilosoi, the year has its end tucked into the beginning of the next year, and so it's cyclical. V'hu toitzuos yisoid amayim, and the year itself comes out of the yisoid hamayim. We said last week, we said that oilam, the world, comes out of the yisoid haruach, comes out of the element of air, because the word ruach doesn't just mean breath, but it also means space. Shana comes out of mayim, dechsiv buhu, as it is written. Ve'eid yala min ha'oretz, there is a mist rising from the earth. Ve'hishka sagan, and it irrigates the garden. So, there's a very interesting verse in the beginning of Genesis, in the second chapter. It talks about before any rain had fallen. So there's this time before rain has fallen. You know, I mean, if we look at the world that we live in, it's hard to imagine that there was a time when rain didn't fall, especially as paleontologists tell us that there was millions of years of acid rain long before creatures and plants appeared on Earth, and that rain is really what has shaped the globe that we inhabit. We're talking here about this Garden of Eden. And as we're going to see, the rain depended on Adam and Chava, that it wasn't going to rain until Adam and Eve were going to pray for rain. So the Torah tells us, Ve'eid yala min ha'oretz, there is this mist rising out of the earth, and it's irrigating the surface of the ground. And the Gemara says in Chulin, V'kol siach hasode terem yeh ba'oretz, and all the grasses and herbs of the field before they come into the earth. When was this that the Torah tells us that there was this mist rising? B'male Shabso, this was on the eve of the Sabbath. This was on Friday evening, after the creation of the two human beings. Melamed, this teaches us, says the Gemara, Sheyotzu d'sho'im, that the herbs went out, Va'omdu al Pesach Karka, and they stood at the opening of the ground. Ad shebo Adam Arishon, until original man came, ubikesh aleihem rachamim, and prayed for them, v'yorodu geshomim, and the rains fell, v'tzomchu, and so the plants began to grow. So this is a very interesting image, that the plants are all sort of ready to flourish, but they get to the petach, they get to the gate of the earth, each one is just about to burst forth out of the ground, and they stop. And they wait for rain, and the rain waits for man to pray for rain. Why? It's a very interesting concept the Gemara has. Lelamdach to teach you Shahakodesh Baruch Hu Misave Letfiloson Shel Tzadikim, that God craves the prayers of the righteous. That's the Gemara. So we in Sefer Yetzirah, and before that when we've been learning Ishbitz, water is the metaphor that is tied everywhere to craving, longing, desire. As we said, we experience it in the abdomen where we experience desire, and so on. And Mem, Mayim, here in Sefer Yetzirah, we've said the body is split into three, and the lowest one is water, and that is associated with the sensation of thirst and desire and so on. So rain doesn't fall until we pray for it. In other words, until we express the desire for rain, it doesn't come down. Why does God withhold it? Because God has a desire. Lelamdach shehakadosh baruch hu misaveh. You know, the word tava in Hebrew is usually translated as lust. It usually refers to, in fact, it's usually referred in sexual lust. It's called tava. We do find the word tava by the Eitz Hadas, the tree of knowledge of good and evil, and it says Chava looks at it and she sees that the fruit's good to eat. V'tava hi le'inayim. It is just to look at it is to crave it, is to have lust for it, right? And the Gemara uses that word about God. And I think, you know, in the theologies that we have today, not pagan theologies, but if we comparative religion, I don't think you'll really find that theologians that are really hot to express such an opinion that God has tava, God has desire. But what is the desire for? It's for the prayers of the righteous, which is an expression of our desire. And so also the Gemara, when it talks about why did God create our mothers all barren and they had to go through such a long process before they could have children? Again, because God has a craving for the craving of humans. Umashma, so now if we go back to the original text, we see that Droshes HaGemara, what the Talmud is saying is Ve'ed Yalem in Ha'aretz, the mist that rises from the earth, that is referring to the prayers of Adam, and that is what irrigates the earth. Shehispalel al hageshem, that Adam prayed for rain. Vehisbanu beperik aleph mishnah hay, in the first chapter, in the fifth mishnah, we explain shehamayim meramzim al tshuka, that water is always a metaphor for desire. Ushakadosh baruch hu misaveh letfiloson shel tzadikim, God has this craving for the desires, for the prayers of the tzaddikim. Vatzaddikim is avni shus Hashem, and it's reciprocal, because the tzaddikim, the righteous, we just have a desire for the salvation to come from God, and God has the desire for our desire. Vahakshomim yoridim, and so the rains come down min hashamayim, from heaven. Vaholchim el hayom, and they flow to the sea. Vaolim ka'anonim, and then they rise, they evaporate as clouds. V'choizrim cholila, and so it goes over and over again, k'moy hashona, like the year. So water, the way water flows, it begins. The reason I brought this Gemara is to express the cyclical nature of mayim, and that its very source is the desire for the desire. And water itself falls, flows, evaporates, goes up, falls again, and water is a metaphor for the year, the cycle of the year. V'ne'isa, we learn, this is the second paragraph, we learn in the Gemara, Chamishim sha'arei binu nivru'u ba'olam, there were 50 gates of understanding, of bina, that were created in the world, v'kulam nitnu l'moshe chose echad, and all of them were given to Moshe except one. So Moshe was given a pass key to all the 50 gates of understanding bar one, which means that he was given access to 49 of the 50 gates. Ve'isa b'medrash, we learn in the medrash, Dvorim shelo niglu l'Moshe, things that were not revealed to Moshe, niglu l'Rabbi Akiva v'chaver, they were revealed to Rabbi Akiva and his friends. So Rabbi Akiva is allowed into the 50th gate. As the Pasuk says, the verse says in Job, V'chol yikar ra'aso enoi, and all this preciousness his eyes have seen, Zer Rabbi Akiva v'chaveru, this refers to Rabbi Akiva and his friends who went into paradise. Sher Rabbi Akiva nechnis b'shar ha'chamishim, because Rabbi Akiva went into the 50th gate, She'i efshel l'poischoi mebachutz elo mebifnim. The thing about the 50th gate is that you can only unlock it from the inside. So in order to pass through the gate, you already have to be on the inside. It's paradoxical. What kind of gate is it that you have to be on the inside to open it? Or in other words, if you go through the gate, it means you went through the gate, because you can't pass through it from the outside in. You have to find yourself transported into the inside. V'ushah shel balei tshuva. This is the gate through which penitents, through which the Baal Tshuva passes. The Issa we learn in the Gemara of Rabavuhu. Rabavuhu says, Mokoim she balei tshuva oimdim, the place where the Baal Tshuva stands, ain't tzadikim gemurim ain't yoimdim sham. Somebody who's a tzadik, a perfect saint and has never sinned, can't stand there. Why? Shenema, as it is written, Sholoim, Sholoim, peace, peace l'rochoik v'lakoroiv, to the one who is far and to the one who is near. And the Gemara has a drash that there is more peace to the one who was far. So somebody who's coming from a long distance, meaning somebody who has been distant from the source because of the things that they've done, and now they are returning, so there's this inyan of Sholoim, Sholoim. And in the note below, note number 37, I say Sholem Sholem Bechinas Yisoid Shebi Yisoid. The sphere of Yisod is the sphere of connection, because Sholem, all peacemaking, has to be connected to the middah of Yisod, of connection, right? Because peace is something that you make among enemies or those who are separated. So when we talk about Sholoim, Sholoim, a double peace, we're talking about the Yisod of the Yisod, the connection of the connection, which is the deepest. And that's what God promises the person who is doing teshuva, the person who is trying to fix their past. So Rabbi Akiva, he's the Baal Tshuva. Up until the age of 40, Rabbi Akiva really was an anti-rabbinical person, and he used to say, you know, if you would have shown me a Talmud Chochem when I was in ignoramus, I would have bitten him like a donkey. And we already talked about that in previous mission, in the preface to this perek. So one of his students said, Rebbe, why biting like a donkey? Why not biting like a dog? He says, yeah, because when a donkey bites, he breaks the bones. Right? And so that's how angry I was at rabbis, that if you would have shown me one, I would have bit him like a... And we said that Rabbi Akiva, according to the Kabbalah, has the soul of Yisachar, the son of Leah, the fifth son of Leah. And Yisachar is Chamor Gorem, right? His totem is the donkey. And that, in fact, Rabbi Akiva is very much connected to that image of the donkey for a whole number of reasons in the Kabbalah that we actually talked about in the first Mishnah. So Rabbi Akiva is the connection, and so because he's the Baal Tshuva, he's vouchsafed the vision that is there in the 50th gate, which is not revealed to Moshe. Va'oid, furthermore, so Rabbi Akiva ben Gerim. Rabbi Akiva, as we said also in the first Mishnah, Rabbi Akiva is descendant of Ya'el, Eshes Cheva Keni, and Cicero. And so his family originally was not Jewish, and his parents converted to Judaism. So he comes from Malchus. He comes from the Bechina of Gerim, of converts to Judaism, who are connected to the sphere of Malchus. Deleis le migar meklum. One of the things about Malchus is that it doesn't have any power of its own. Sovereignty is that which is given. The power of the king is the authority that people vest in him. It's just the king or the queen is just a person who doesn't even carry a weapon, right? The soldiers around do the will of the king. So the king doesn't really have power. You know, king doesn't have to come into your kitchen and tell you what to do, you know, for that to be the law. Because the king says such and such is the law, and then everybody follows that. That's the theory at any rate. In paragraph 3, the Isa, we also learn in the Gemara in Chulin, Reb Shimon ben Pazi asked like this, Ksiv, it's written, God made the two luminaries, Hagdoilim, the great ones. And then immediately after that it says, Es Hamoir Hagodoil, the great luminary, Memsheles Hayoim, to rule the day, Ves Hamoir Hakoton, and the small luminary, the moon, to rule the night. So we have an apparent contradiction in the verse, because first the Torah tells us that God made two great luminaries, and immediately gets qualified by saying, well, the great one is the sun and the lesser one is the moon. What was going on? It's not a contradiction. What happened is like this. Omro yoreach lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the moon said to God, Master of the world, Ribbono shel Olam, efshel lishnei malochim sheyishtamshu bekesa echad, is it possible for two kings to rule using the same crown? If you look at note number 38, I bring the whole Gemara. The Gemara. So God says, Omala, God said, Lechi umiyati esatzmech. He said to the moon, okay, you're right, you can't have two kings wearing the same crown, so go make yourself small. Let the sun be the one wearing the crown, and you'll be the small one. Omra lefonav, so the moon said, Reboine shaloyna, master of the world, Hoyel v'omati lefonecha dovahogen, because I said something proper, Amit is Atzmi, so I'm the one that has to make myself small? Why don't you tell the sun to make itself small? Omalo. So God says to the moon, L'chi u'moshel b'yoymu b'alaylo. You know what? You, the moon, you can be seen during the day as well. Sometimes, at certain times of the year, if the conditions are right, you can see the moon even during the daytime, whereas you can never see the sun in the nighttime. Omalei, so the moon said to God, "My revuse deshrage b'tihar, of what use is a candle at noon? Like, you can see the moon during the daytime, but so what? It's not like I give any light. My honey, or what use is it?" Omalei, so God said to the moon, "Zil limni bach yisro, go, the Yidna are going to count using you, yomim v'shonim, they'll use you to fix their calendar. We have a lunar calendar." The moon said, Omrele, Yuma name iefshadilamoni beit kufta. You can't fix a Jewish calendar without resorting to the solar. You know, you can't have a lunar calendar, otherwise you would have a Mohammedan, a Muslim calendar, which is a purely lunar calendar. But our calendar keeps on resorting to the equinoxes, especially the vernal equinox, because we have to have Pesach in the springtime. So we add extra months, 7 extra months in every 19 years, right? So basically, we are doing sleight of hand to make the lunar calendar jive with the solar calendar, but it's really the solar calendar that dictates. So don't tell me that the Jews are going to be lunar and so on and so on, and therefore I should be satisfied. Ultimately, it's the sun that dictates the year. So God said to Zil, go, likri tzadiki b'shmech. You know, there's going to be tzadikim, great saints, who are going to call themselves after you. Yaakov HaKoton. Yaakov is going to be called the small Shmuel HaKoton, Samuel the prophet will be called the small, David will be called, King David will call himself the small. So you're the moon, the small, they're the small. Chazio, God could see the look of Meis V'data, that this was not very satisfying to the moon, and that in fact it didn't hit the spot. Omar Kodesh Baruch Hu, so God said to the moon, Heviu Kaporo Olai, bring an atonement for me, Shemi'atati Yesayu Reach, that I diminished the moon. Behind the Omer Reb Shimon ben Lokish, and this is what Reb Shimon ben Lokish meant when he said, Ma'anishtana So'ir Shal Rish Chodesh, if you look in Numbers, where it describes all the different offerings that come for Shabbos, for Rosh Chodesh, for Pesach, Shavuos, Sukkos, everything is enumerated there day by day. The first one is Shabbos, the second one is Rosh Chodesh. And every Musaf, these are the Musaf, because there's the daily offering, which is called the Tamid, it happens every day. And there's the Musaf of Shabbos, the additional offering of Shabbos, the Musaf of Rosh Chodesh, and so on. So every time we bring a musaf, there's a sin offering attached, a chatat, sometimes a bullock, but sometimes a sa'ir, a goat. So every time the Torah tells us to bring this musaf offering, it says v'sa'ir l'chaper, and a goat to atone. But when the Torah gives us the instruction about the new moon offering, it says, Chatat, a sin offering, Lashem, for God. Omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so this is Resh Lakish, Reb Shimon ben Lakish, doing the drash. Why does the Torah tell us, Chatos Lashem, a sin offering for God? Not that you bring the sin offering to God, but rather, God says, So is there, let this sin offering, this goat, be a kapora for me, let it atone for me, shmiyatati yasayarech, that I diminish the moon. And so it is that every month on the new moon there's a sin offering, so to speak, for God who diminished the moon. It's a very interesting idea, to say the least, right? I mean, again, you know, many people out there in the world, they think, oh, I know everything there is to know about Judaism because, you know, I went to Sunday school back when I was 6 years old up until my bar mitzvah, my bat mitzvah, you know. If people knew what radical ideas are there in the text, in the basic text of the Gemara, things that if you or I were to write into a local Jewish paper and say these things out loud as, this is my idea, I think God sinned when he diminished the feminine. And, you know, God has been, since the creation of the world, God has been atoning for, you know, this diminution of the feminine represented by the moon and so on. People would say, look, you know, why are you bringing your New Age stuff here? And, you know, who gives you permission to put these radical, you know, non-Jewish, paganite, whatever, you know? It's like the Gemara is full of very radical ideas. So the moon comes to God and says, you know, we can't have two kings wearing the same crown. God says to the moon, okay, diminish yourself. Now we're back in the main text. V'kosho. So my question is like this. Lomo hizramo hayirech likatchila. Why did the moon object in the first place? Saying, ha'efshe l'shnei malochim shi'ishtamshu b'kesechot. Saying, you know, there's an assumption that you can't have two kings wearing one crown. Lomo loy. Why not? Let them both wear the same crown. Who is it that obliges the moon to make that assumption to then come and make complaints about the kingdom, so to speak? Why shouldn't they reach some kind of a compromise, the sun and the moon? Like, why isn't it possible? Why is there no assumption that such a thing is possible? To answer the question, it's possible to say, Shadono din la'atzmo, that the moon did a logical continuation of the argument that we brought in Mishnah Gimel in the previous Mishnah. Shoshanina, there we said, Avia Nivra Meruach Machria Ben Time. The end of the Mishnah, the previous Mishnah, says that you have heaven made from, Shemaim is made from Esh, the Oretz, earth, is made from Maim, water, and in between them you have Avir, the air, which is made from Ruach, the breath, which is Machria Ben Time, which tips the balance between them. And we talked about the source of this idea of Machria Ben Time. What does it mean? Usually, it's understood it compromised. Machria means, we brought the brice of Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel says, Shnei Ksuvim Amar Kishim, says that you have two verses that contradict one another. Yovai Kosva Shlishi, till he comes a third verse, V'yachria Beinem, and makes, so to speak, peace between them. And the proof text was, you have one verse that says God spoke to us from heaven. You have another verse that contradicts it by saying God came down on Mount Sinai. Then you have a third verse which says, which basically tells us that God brought the heaven down onto Sinai. So they're both true. He spoke to us from Sinai, also from heaven. But then we said there's another way of looking at it, which was Rabbi Akiva's way, which Machria doesn't mean that the third verse comes to compromise or somehow make peace. But really Machria comes from the word Korea, means to make bow. That Machria, what happens is that the third verse comes along and decides, it pushes its weight and forces the issue that one side is right and not the other side. So now we have the moon, which is, so to speak, a disciple of the school of Rabbi Akiva, and understands Shnei Me'oris HaGdolim, two great luminaries wearing the crown, and comes before God and says, no, there has to be a top and a bottom. There has to be a heavy and a light. There has to be a great and a small. We can't have the reconciliation by saying, well, both of you figure it out between you, make peace, and both wear the same crown. V'alibed Rebbe Akiva, Sheshitas Bachro, that Rebbe Akiva's idea of Hachra'ah, tipping the balance, is Shalav Lasis Sholem, it's not coming to make peace, Pshora, and compromise, Bein Atzdodim, between the sides. Machria Elo Likfia, it's coming to force, Bekoyach, with power, Oiletzad Zay, either to this side, Oiletzad Ach, either to the other one. And that's why Machria, I have translated in our Mishnah, is Machria tipping the balance. Not making peace, but tipping the balance. Because, according to how I understand it, the Sefer Yetzirah comes from, at least, if not from Rabbi Akiva himself, but from his school. Shechidish of Rabbi Akiva, that one of the things that Rabbi Akiva innovated, Shtei Koyach HaMayim is Gabrim Al Koyach HaEsh, that water can overpower fire. B'hachro'as ha'avir, with the help of the air, and it can force heaven to bow to the earth. B'chinas mima akiv al yotcho, as we said, Moshe went up into heaven. She'ikiv Rabbi Akiva l'Kodesh Baruch liktiv likshoi ksorim l'oisis. The medrash that we brought was that Moshe goes up to heaven and he sees God tying little crowns to the letters, and he says to God, mi machria, who's forcing? There's the word machria. Who's making you bow? In other words, who's forcing you to change the shapes of the letters? I mean, at this late stage, yeah, you're about to give me the Torah and you're still fiddling with the shapes of the letters? So God said to him, well, it's Rabbi Akiva. He's not born yet. He's going to be born in many generations, but he's going to need source material for so many halachot that he's going to develop through his exegetical rules, that he needs to have these crowns on the letters to assist him. So what does it mean when Moshe says to God, who's forcing you? Mi machria. He's saying, who's forcing you to make room? Because the letters are black. The space around them is white. It's like earth and heaven. So Rabbi Akiva, what he's doing, it needs crowns pushing up from the ladders, pushing from the black up into the white. So it's as though heaven has to withdraw and make space for more earth, right? It's as though, imagine we would start to build skyscrapers 5,000 miles high, you know, not you know, 1,000 meters, you know, like the Sears Tower, but like, just imagine you looked at Earth and you saw these buildings sticking out halfway to the moon. That's the image of the letters that Rabbi Akiva is forcing God to make. He's forcing the heaven to make room for the hispashtus, for the spreading of the earthly, of the dark, of the black. Even if they spread all the way up into the highest heavens. So that's why the moon also asks, because the moon also comes from the element of water. Hisnasus ala shemesh, and asks for dominion over the sun, which is fire. So just as earth overcomes heaven, and earth comes from water, and heaven comes, shemaim comes from esh, so the moon, which is, represents water, demands dominion over esh, according to the teaching of Rabbi Akiva. So Rabbi Akiva's teaching about two verses that contradict each other applies also to this one. We're in the next paragraph. So before we go on, let's have a look at a meaning. What does it mean, dominion? What does it mean, sovereignty? What are we really talking about? Da, you should know. Ki HaKadosh Baruch Hu bara kol dovah, God created everything, so that the thing should be unique, one and the only in the world. God didn't repeat or imitate anything from small to great. There are no two things in the universe that are alike. And even if you say that two, you know, electrons are alike, they're not alike because they don't have the same position. Right? So, I mean, even the most basic things, they are describable, they're distinguishable by their position or by some other attribute. L'chein amru b'Sanhedrin, so the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, Ein shnei neviim misnabim b'signoin echad. You can't find anywhere in the books of the Tanakh that prophets prophesy using the same style. In fact, according to the halacha, if you have two prophets who prophesy using the same style, we kill them both because they're obviously false prophets. V'zeh simen muvhak, and this is an unbeatable sign, shehanavua amitis, that the prophecy is a true divine prophecy. She'af al pi shehanavi oimer ma shechaver oimer, even though two prophets are basically carrying the same message, right? God says repent. God says if you don't repent, things are going to get really bad around here. God says treat the widows and the orphans, have some rachmonis, treat them honestly, don't corrupt the law, and so on. Basically, the prophets had the same message, right? Afapi Cain, nevertheless, oimre b'signum yuchad la'atzmoy, the style that the prophet Zechariah uses could never be mistaken for the style that the prophet Isaiah uses, or the prophet Daniel, or the prophet Micha. I mean, each of them has their own very distinctive way of saying things. We learn in the Me'ah Shiloach, Dehavik Kmoi Shemitzayrim Tzuris HaMelech Al Kal Kamo Alofim Tavlois. The Me'ah Shiloach explains what does it mean, individuality, in the sense of we are the representation of God. You know, we think of every human as an individual, but when we look at humans as a whole, it's hard to see, you know, what's so individual, right? I mean, I look at, from this distance here, you know, I look at India or China, you know, billion people, they're all the same to me from here, right? I guess if he looks at me in my community, he can't see that much difference. All those Hasidim, they all look alike, right? So what does it mean? So the Meir Shleich says, "Dav kumish mitzayim tzuras hamelech al kam alofim tavlois." If you imagine a mosaic, and the mosaic has an image of a king, and the image is made up of thousands of individual tiles, and each tile has a place in the picture and carries a certain amount of information. And each one is slightly, maybe even very slightly, different from the other one. It's, I guess the Meir Shleich is working pre-pixel era, and so the closest he could come to that is, but if you think of your screen, right, and you look at it as pixels, they all look very similar, and yet when you place them side by side, you have an image of a page with writing on it, right? So imagine that this is a picture of the king made up of thousands upon thousands of little mosaic tiles. Virak v'chol tablet tavla mishuna k'tzas mechavata, each tablet is slightly different from its neighbor. Virak behischabrusan, it's only when you bring them all together, nikeres tzuris ha-melech, that you can tell, if I look from the distance now, it's obvious this is a portrait of the king. Or behifrodom, when you separate all these million tiles, nifrodim la'alofim tzuris boideles, all you have is million tiles, and each tile has a little something on it, a little color, a little pink, a little blue, a little black. You can't pick out from any of these million little tablets one and say, this is the most important one. Because they're all part of this big picture. And one doesn't have dominion over the other. Nevertheless, if one tablet is missing, there's something missing. So in the sense that if one is missing, you could say, yeah, the king is not complete unless we find that one tablet that's missing. It is the most vital and important one. But on the other hand, you can't pick out any individual piece and say, that's the one that's the most important. And so it is with people. V'zek dugme l'chol nivro. That we all human beings together, when you look at us, you're looking at God, you're looking at a picture of God. When you look at all the trees in the world, you're looking at a picture of God. When you look at all the sunsets in the world, you're looking at God. Whatever you look at in the world, you're looking at God. You can't pick out one sunset and say, October 4th, 1972, Big Sur, California, that was the one, that was the sunset that really said God. No. All the sunsets that have existed since the beginning of time, they all, put them all together, that's the face of God, right? Take all the people in the world, put them together, that's the face of God, right? And you can do that with any community, right? So you can't say, one is the most important. Nevertheless, if one is missing, there's something missing in the picture of God. Okay, so now we've talked about hisnasis in general, that we all represent God when we are united, and that we're all carrying a little piece of God that is individual, because God doesn't repeat himself. And so, in a sense, yes, I'm the most important, because if I'm missing, there's something missing from the shape of God, the face of God, the picture. On the other hand, I don't have any more importance than you. So where does importance come from? Where does dominion come from? Eloksiv, so this is Ishbitza Torah, Kala Oivid Ala Pikudim, the Ishbitza says, Shebezeh HaRega, the moment, Shehoyuhu Oivid Ala Pikudim, when the Yidl was passing by the census taker, Hoyeprat Echad Shehuyu Mevure Bo Yoisim Min HaKlal Yisro. That as we pass in front of the census taker, and when we stand on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur says Mi loy nifkad kayyam hazeh. Who doesn't get counted? The moment that you get counted, at that moment, God is looking at that thing in you that He gave you, which is special to you. At that moment, you're the most important person in the world. So the moment that every Jew was counted, so at that moment, when a Yidl went past, and Moshe and Aaron and the chief of the tribe were looking at this person and saying, oh, who is he, who is he? And the chief of the tribe would explain to Moshe and Aaron who he was. At that moment, that person was the most important Yidl, and everybody else was included within him. So the Ishbitzi says, where do we find specialness in ourselves when we're not being counted, when we're not being looked at by someone else? Where do we find that? And for some reason it appears to be important. And this was what the Jews were arguing with Moshe about when they said, Hayesha Hashem b'kirbeinu im ayin, is God among us or not? Because when Moshe was around, who could feel important? You know, when we were in Egypt, I guess it's like that in a very rural community, or in a situation where everybody can delude themselves that they're the king. Like in England, they say every man's house is his castle. Right? So a person is king in his own home. But when Moshe's around, who's king? Who are you kidding? So as soon as we got out of Egypt and we were walking through the desert, we started to feel that sense of, who am I? How do I count? What am I important? And that only was fixed when Yisroi Chosin Moshe, when Jethro, the father-in-law of Moshe, came and converted to Judaism. Then every Jew could feel important relative to the person who is coming, like the convert comes and he says, please give me something that you have. Please, I want to join. Teach me, show me, be my mentor, be bigger than me, right? So even the lowest Jew was then able to say, I've got something to teach Yisroel. I wish he would come and talk to me. I could put him right. This is the inyan of Isnasis, that part of us which needs to be princely, which needs to have dominion. V'zeh shechidish Reb Akiva. And this is something that Rabbi Akiva brought, Shabo Miyal Eshes Cheva Keni Mizera Yisroi, that Rabbi Akiva, who himself was a descendant of Jethro, V'isam Ibnei Borim Shel, the Gemara says that Yael was the wife of Cheva the Kenite, and the Kenites, Keni is one of the names of Yisroi. V'isam. And we learn in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, we mentioned in the preface to the first Mishnah, Mibnei Bonim Shel Sisroi, the grandchildren of Sisroi, Lomdu Torah Berabim, they were teaching Torah in public, Umani, and who is this? Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva, Hu HaNefesh Asher Osu B'Choron, and we also said that Rabbi Akiva is the soul that Avraham and Sarah made when they were in Choron, as we taught in the preface to Mishnah 1. Rabbi Akiva is the shoresh of the Torah Shabbat Peh. Rabbi Akiva is the source of the oral Torah, which is the Torah Deleis Migarme. It's called Malchus. Why is the Torah Shabbat Peh called Malchus, the sphere of Malchus? Because as we said before, sovereignty doesn't really have anything of its own. Only what it is given by the king only has power that is given by his people. So Malchus is considered the sephira that doesn't really have anything of its own. It only has what it is bestowed upon it. And the Torah Shebaal Peh, the oral Torah, also doesn't have anything of its own. It doesn't exist except by the virtue of the Torah Shebiksav. All the power of the Torah Shebaal Peh, the oral Torah, is that which is given to it by the written Torah. Because the Torah Shebaal Peh, the oral Torah, is like the moon. All the light of the moon is really reflected from the sun. And even though we experience the moon more in some ways than the sun, we experience the tides, the tug of the moon, whereas we don't experience tides from the sun, even though the sun has a much bigger pull on Earth. But because it's so far away, it doesn't matter which part of the Earth you are, the gravitational pull of the sun is equal, whereas the moon is so much weaker, and therefore when the moon is on one side of the Earth, it pulls the water that way, whereas when it's on the other side, it pulls it the other way. So, let's wrap this up. V'isa b'sefer Etz Chaim. This is the next paragraph. We learn in the book Etz Chaim from the Ari. V'hine ein motzien kusha, ono motzien kusha achas b'divrei Chazal. We find a question that just pops up out at us in the words of our sages. Ki pa machas motzien b'divreim. There are times when we find in their words, ki moshe b'netzach v'arim b'hoid, that Moshe is considered to be the avatar, the paradigm of the Sephira of Netzach, victory, or eternity, and Aaron is the paradigm of the Sephira of Hoyd, beauty. Moshe Sida Bala Ishanis, in the Hoshana that we do for Sukkot and for Hoshana Rabbah, it's clear that the fourth one is Moshe, the fifth one is Aaron, the fourth one is Netzach, the fifth one is Hoyd, the sixth one is Yosef, the seventh one is David. So it's clear that the author of the Hoshanas considers Moshe to be Netzach and Aaron Hoyd. On the other hand, on Uroin Shemoshe Hoya Levi, Moshe was a Levi. Levi is Gevura, which is the left side, which is the side of Hoyd. Whereas Aaron is the Chesed, Oyev Shalom Roydev Shalom, and which is the side of the right side, which is the side of Netzach. So the Ari says that we've already explained this mystery, because the Oyrois Hayeminim de Yesoid Abba, the right-handed lights that come from the Yesoid of Abba, you know, Chochma and Bino are known as Abba and Imma, father and mother. And these two Sefirot of Chochma and Bina are considered to be in a constant state of coupling. So Chochma is when Abba and Ima, when father and mother, these are called Trei Rein Delo Misparshin, the two lovers who cannot be separated. So the emanation that comes from Abba, from father, it really flows into Ima. It can only flow out of Ima when it's sort of, so to speak, coming backwards. And so if it's a right-handed thing flowing into Ima, it comes out as a left-handed thing. And if it's a left-handed thing flowing into Ima, it's coming out right-handed, because they're coupled one inside the other. So the Ari says, this is why the light of Moshe and Aaron, of Netzach and Hoyd, sometimes it appears that it's right-handed, sometimes left-handed, sometimes Moshe is Netzach, sometimes Aaron is Netzach, and so on. And this is why the Zohar says, the verse tells us, and they stood there, and Moshe and Aaron stood there in front of Pharaoh, and they brought the Jewish people out of Egypt. Who Moshe and Aaron? So who in Hebrew means he, H-E. Not they, but who. He's Moshe and Aaron. Why didn't the verse say, this is the Zohar, why didn't it say they are Moshe and Aaron? The Zohar says, because really you can't separate them into they. Moshe and Aaron aren't really a they. It's Moshe, he's Aaron. He's Aaron, he's Moshe. Sheshneim shkulim, that they're both equivalent. Lechlola isha b'maya, and it mingles fire and water, mayim b'isha, and water and fire, because Aaron represents water, Moshe represents fire, and sometimes Aaron represents fire, Moshe represents water, and they are commingled, and they're really ideas, and sometimes they're not distinguishable from one another. That's the Zohar. Voidisa b'sefer Me'eshaloich, and we also learn in Me'eshaloich. Or be'inyan hisnasis, when we talk about leadership or dominion, nimtza oimik she'en lahovin, there are depths that you can't really simply explain. Hecha Hashem Yisborach noisin hisnasis l'shnei tzadikim. How could God make two people the leader of the generation? Each one of them is the supreme leader. How can you have two supreme leaders? Vigam alasheni. It's not just that each one is the supreme leader of the Jewish people, but each one is the supreme leader of the other one and the Jewish people. Kini Moshe v'Aaron, like Moshe and Aaron. Shori kol echad v'echad chad bedore. Each one was one in a generation. How could that be? It's a contradiction in itself, in terms. V'zeh moiridu nisim, one of the names of God. In fact, it's one of the names of God that we meditate on during the duchening, during the priestly blessing. Is written dalad yud vuv, which is du, meaning two, duo. Nisim is miraculous, like the nes, because Moshe and Aaron are a double miracle, and they represent that aspect of God which is dual, right? V'hoi efshele l'kodesh baruch l'ses l'oisis nasis l'shemesh. So now if we go back to the beginning and we look at what God can do, we see here that Moshe and Aaron can both be wearing the crown, right? You got two leaders and they're both supreme over the other and over the whole Jewish people, and yet it's a miraculous thing. You can't ask a question how it can be. It can be, God can make it be. So how come God couldn't make it be that the moon and the sun would find some way of sharing the crown? It could be. It definitely could be. So why isn't it? Kach ola b'machshov. Here we come back to this phrase that God says to Moshe when Moshe starts to ask about Rabbi Akiva. Every time you ask something about Rabbi Akiva, God says, shtok, be silent. Kach ola b'machshova, this is how it arose in the thought, milafonai. And as we're going to see, the miut ha'yirech, the diminution of the moon, is one of those things that arises in the thought. And in fact, when God talks to Moshe about Rabbi Akiva, he's really talking about the diminution of the moon. I think we'll stop here.